D1, number 15A.
We started this morning with the level of absolute Christian Science, which is the level which really indicates now how the divine cause, divine origin, expresses itself as ideas of that enormous cause. In the Word, we have life, truth, and love. And I was saying that this morning that Mrs. Eddy said her discovery is Christ Science, or the divine laws of life, truth, and love. And we were discussing what are the divine laws of life, that we could see that the law of life is not the law of causality, of cause leading to an effect, but that the law of life is the law of spontaneity, the law of nowness, it's the law of isness, therefore it is independent of what has gone before. See, it's really, I think we could say, really the law of life is the divine origin made present. It's the divine origin constantly made present. That's the law of life. It hasn't anything anymore to do that today is dependent on what happened yesterday and that tomorrow is determined by what happens today. The now, the presence, is the divine origin made manifest. It's always the divine origin, right here now, made manifest. There is no more a link of past to the now and of the now to the future. In life, there is no time. The time concept is a human concept, is a human invention, and has nothing to do with being. Therefore, one can see now what has gone before, and can see now what is coming humanly and divinely. Everything is in the now. For the one life, the law of life, there is only nowness. There is only isness. And this explains so many things which the psychologists today are finding out, that we can know at the present what has long gone before and has been lost in consciousness and is still there in subconsciousness, therefore still now. And that's why the subconscious already can see what is to come, because the foundation of being, the root of being, is isness. So little by little, the time concept is broken down in human consciousness. Now, what is the law of truth in science? You see, in the other sciences, we are trying to find truth. In the science of being, truth is the basis, the principle of all science. We go out from the fact that truth is here and is self-realizing itself. In the ordinary way of scientific thinking, we are working to find out truth through reasoning. But more and more, the thinkers of today find out that there is another law which annuls this law. And they begin to realize that all there is to be known is already here now. And that we have not yet found and cultured the right approach to draw from this truth, which is already here. More and more they begin to realize that the real big discoveries that have been made, not the inventions, the discoveries that have been made, have not come through the line of reasoning, logically, working hard, logically, until they have found it out. But that the big discoveries came by revelation, illumination, intuition, whatever they may call it. And many of the big universities of high standing are now asking themselves, can we find out a new method of going right to that source of truth? And therefore they see that the spiritual seers who have also discovered spiritual truth have had another method of getting hold of the underlying primary knowledge than through rational thinking. It just seems that the rational age does not come to an end, but will be growing into and being integrated into something bigger, namely that which we find as the law of truth, namely to see that truth itself realizes itself, that truth itself reveals itself, that we can't find out truth, that truth comes to us and reveals itself to us. And because the rational thought of the last few centuries, especially starting with Descartes, the French rationalist, has covered up that intuitive, that revelatory method of being able to go right to the source of knowledge. Why is it, really, we can ask ourselves, you see, that 1,000 years back, in those cultures where people were culturing that method of meditation, like the Chinese, that they already 1,000 years back have quite definitely already seen the structure of the atom, that they already have seen that time is only another dimension of space. They have seen that which today, in the last few years, in our history, we have through reason proved to be so. But they had the concrete intuition of all that already. But because they didn't know the level of Christian science, they only knew something of the level of divine science and absolute Christian science, and therefore it was a bit indefinite and unpractical, because it hasn't been brought down to the level of Christian science. They only could visualize it, but not make it practical in human life. But they could see it. Why? Because it was always there. These facts were always there. They are not inventions, new inventions. They are discoveries of something which has laid there long ago. And so, instead of culturing that which we have been doing for the last 300 years or 400 years in the Western world, that rational thinking, we can see that there must be other methods in order to find truth, or in order that truth is revealed to us. And that's the way Mrs. Eddy shows. Her method in absolute Christian science is that truth reveals itself. It is self-revelation, and so it is also giving a sense of self realization. Truth applies itself. Truth demonstrates itself. And it gives a very different aspect than when we say we have to demonstrate truth. We have to apply truth. As if we, who is the we anyway? The we as a human mentality, as a limited concept, could apply that which is a million times bigger. The greater governs the lower. And it's only a matter of changing our standpoint from that objective standpoint to the subjective standpoint that we come closer and closer to the fact where we feel that truth is applying and demonstrating and realizing itself by itself and as itself always. So this relieves us really from that burden of having to demonstrate truth. It is there, as I said, the law of self-revelation. You know, the heart has more reasons than what the human mind can understand. Much more. And if we can see that in their spiritual significance, we'll see that the revelation of truth will reveal to us things which are much bigger than what human reason can reason out and can figure out. It's a new era breaking in. I think we are jolly lucky to live in at the end of the 6,000 period where it seems just true what has always been true for the last 5,000 year periods, that a completely new era is breaking in on humanity. And not on Christian Scientists, by the way. On humanity. And I think Christian Science is coming today in the form which Christian Scientists don't recognize. It comes through the sciences, comes through the thinkers in the world, not through those few narrow-minded Christian Scientists. Not at all. Not at all. Comes in all its meekness, hidden. Hidden in that deep thinking that is going on in the world, in all fields of science. Truth is too big to be narrowed down into a small little channel of the Christian Science movement or of the Dorley people. It's much bigger than that. Infinitely bigger than that. It's the Christ idea that knows no people, no denominations. It only knows the seeking thought. And wherever there is that seeking thought, then the right idea at the right time will do the trick. And this seems to be a time where everything gets just ripe, either for blowing up or for taking a step forward. The old concepts go. The concept of religion goes, the concept of church goes, the concept of classification of people goes. There's a new era breaking in. The idea itself. Let's take the divine law of love. What is that divine law of love? Love still is a religious symbol and term which the other people in the world don't use so much, though they mean the same thing. They don't speak so much of the law of love as that they speak today of the law of integration, which is love, because love is the divine plan. Love is that symbol for the fact that all ideas are gathered together into one plane, that there is no isolation in the plane of being, that the being is one, and therefore that everything in being must be integrated into one whole. The rational age of science, and with that I always mean from round about 1500 onwards, say from Leonardo da Vinci, Galilei, Kepler onward up to now, that is the typically rational age. That typically rational age was an age of disintegration instead of integration. And the thinkers in the world perceive that this must be changed, that this rational age has disintegrated being into sectors and smaller sectors, into specialization, into that extreme specialization where even people of the same faculty couldn't understand each other anymore because they were so specialized in their subject. And yet they see that man is a whole being and that you can't disintegrate man's being into specialities, the specialities of the brainologist and the specialities of the psychiatrist and the specialities of the internist and the specialities of then the theologians and then the physicists and the chemists and the socialists and so on, but that he is one being. And unless we find the law of integrating all into one, then man will suffer under disintegration and schizophrenia, which is a very dangerous and a disease today coming up. I think they have a statistic that nearly every sixth in America has to go once in his lifetime to a mental hospital. It's too much already. And this all comes that man is torn apart. He doesn't feel any more fixed, settled, protected, firmly grounded as a complete, integrated whole. But the law of love is that which shows the law of integration, the law of unity, the law of oneness, the law of wholeness. It is the law of complete transparency. That's how people call it in the world. They begin to talk about transparency, that everything must become transparent, because as long as things are not transparent, you have duality, you have resistance, you have opposition. But today, the scientists begin to realize that that sense of thinking in terms of opposites is not right. That again is really the fruit of Descartes, the French rationalist, who coined, so to say, for the rational age of thinking the basis that he says either something is or it is not. And we have been thinking that way since those few hundred years, that either a thing is or it is not. Well, that's not true. That's just not true. If that would be so, we would have a duality of the nth degree, a splitting apart of into two which are irreconcilable. And this has lasted until about the 20th of this century, when they have found out that one can look at the light either as a wave or as particles, and that both are just as true as the other. That one is just as true as the other. That if light up to now has been considered as a wave, then in the old sense one said, therefore it can't be a particle. Well, they have found out that it can be either before, and therefore have seen that this sense that we are used to thinking in duality is wrong. That the thing can be and not be at the same time. That the thing can be this or can be something else, just the same. Which is really, you see, which is really the pith of what Mrs. Eddy has discovered. In the beginning, she speaks also that spirit and matter are opposites. She must begin that way, because that's the way how the beginner thinks, and how you begin to make things clear that they are not mixed up and so on. But as the text goes on and on, you begin to feel that she lifts it higher out of a sense of duality into a sense of polarity, and then into a sense of oneness, until at the end she says, well, matter and spirit are only stages and states of consciousness. There she doesn't say anymore they are opposites. There she lifts it up right on the level of absolute Christian Science and says, they are either or. It only depends from which standpoint you look at it. But matter is not matter. Matter is just spirit looked at from a standpoint outside of spirit. And that's what Mrs. Eddy, at the end of her life, wanted to teach Adam Dickey. That she said to Adam Dickey, taking his arm, he said, what is this? And he said, well, that's matter. And she said, no, it is spirit. So he said, no, mother, this is matter. He said, no, this is spirit. And a third time, and she insisted, no, it's spirit. And so he went out. He couldn't grasp it yet at that time. But it is. If there would be two substances opposite to each other, like spirit and matter, then we would have two principles in being, not one. So the law of transparency, from which I went out, the law of transparency is the law of love, which shows that in the measure as we look out from God, then everything becomes spiritually transparent. Then from that point of view, nothing is any more opposed to being. And the whole sense of opposition and opposites and anti and so on goes right out, so that you could look spiritually through everything. And that's where Jesus just walked through the wall. Well, we haven't done it yet. I still like to use the door. And I don't see much reason why I shouldn't use the door and go through the wall. I may come into some room which isn't appropriate. But in a smaller measure, we begin to see that, experience that, and live in that realm. That more and more, that law of transparency becomes really real to us, because we are no more seeing matter as material stuff, but because we only see through matter into the idea. And so matter becomes more and more just a state and stages of consciousness. And that's where we start. And that is the law of transparency. When you read books today from philosophers, artists, and so on, you see, especially in art, in modern art, in good modern art, that all goes into that line of transparency. The rigid forms, the objective forms, are taken out of the pictures. And what they try to do is to show that clearness and depth and whiteness in everything. Just as in the earlier Picassos, he had seen long before Einstein that time is only a dimension of space. You see, and therefore he painted, say, a figure from three different sides in one figure with three different heads on the three different sides. Perhaps you know that picture like this. You see, which he shows that man is an integrated being. He's not just one thing like that, and that's finished. That's all about that thing. No, he's the whole round of him. Every aspect of him belongs to him. So whatever happens in time movement is just a dimension of space, which afterwards, then 20 years afterwards, Einstein put down in practical terms and in mathematical definitions that time is only a dimension of space, and you had the taste spine as space-time continuum. But art usually in advance feels what's coming, because the true artist is that one which knows something about the new law of truth, of that self-revelation of truth that comes without rational thinking. And only later on then the technical sciences take it over and put it into practical terms and mathematical terms. But the age was just full at the beginning of this century of the new dimension that would come in, the fourth dimension coming in. The artist could see it. Many of your English poets could see it. Many of the English poets would say that the moment of a yew tree is the moment of a rose. You see, that it is just the same moment. Even if it's a tree that humanly seen grows for many centuries, or the rose just for a few days, that the moment of a yew tree is the moment of a rose. It's one moment. It's just time. Just isness. And so when the artist sees that before the physical scientists see it, it is because they know something of that intuitive method of reaching truth, of that intuitive method which is really the method of the spiritual seers, of the prophets, of a Jesus, of a Mrs. Eddy, of a John Dorley, that can feel what's coming. Even if perhaps they cannot yet define in practical terms clear enough so that everybody can understand it. That's the law of transparency. See, where time, space, matter, everything becomes transparent, and therefore there is no accuser there. It's the law of the divine plan. If I were French, I would say it's the law of the grand design that's coming. It's the law of the grand design. It's the law where we begin to see, the law of love, where we begin to see that everything in being is part in one of one grand design. That everything that happens is not happening for itself. That it isn't happening for the fulfillment of an individual proposition. That it is only happening within a grand design. That infinite plan. It's no more piecework. The technology of today is a terrific piecework. Terrific piecework. You make the most wonderful machines for one purpose without any consideration how it affects humanity, how it affects the neighbor, how it affects the country, how it affects other people, other nations, and so on. It's piecework. It hasn't in itself that law of the grand design. But being is one being. See, it's the one love, one being. And therefore, the law ruling in that one being must be a law ruling each individual case for the purpose of the one grand plan design.